Okay, well, let's make a start. Welcome everybody for the second day of our board meeting, in which will be solely devoted to primary financial statements. And for that purpose, I give the floor to Aida.
Thank you very much, Hans, and good morning, everyone. PFS team are back at the board table, and we are happy to be back, even in these circumstances. So we have quite a few papers with the feedback on the exposure draft to go through, and I will start by just giving brief overview of the first paper, 21A. So the proposals in the exposure draft have created lots of interest with our stakeholders, as we might have expected. They've written 215 comments letters, and we are very happy to, for this number, to also include 13 comments letters from users of financial statements. And stakeholders have attended also one of 140 project-related events we organized between January and October this year. A few of these events, we had over 1,000 people participating. We are very grateful for the time stakeholders have taken to provide the feedback, and we are particularly grateful to 50 companies who have engaged in fieldwork with us and volunteered to test the proposals and provided us with valuable evidence in this process. Overall, the proposals, I would say, were well received by respondents, in particular by users of financial statements who have expressed strong agreement with the project objectives and the specific proposals. On specific proposals, there was most agreement, I would say, with proposals for subtotals and categories in the statement of profit or loss and proposals for management performance measures. And I would say we had general agreement together with some practical concerns in relation to proposals for unusual income and expenses and general proposals for disaggregation. And finally, the feedback on proposals for integral and non-integral associates and joint ventures and proposals for analysis of operating expenses by nature and by function was, I would describe, quite mixed. So what we will do in the board sessions today and tomorrow, we will discuss feedback on each of the project topics, going through agenda papers from 21B to 21J. And then we are planning to discuss agenda paper 21K, which gives a summary of feedback from users of financial statements, and followed by agenda paper 21L, which reviews relevant literature to the topics discussed in the exposure draft. So today and tomorrow, we are not asking board to make decisions. However, in each paper, we ask board members to comment on any feedback that was unclear, that provides new information, or that needs further research. And your input on these questions will help us in planning redeliberations, and we plan to discuss this at the next board meeting. So before I hand over to Caroline to start discussing feedback by topics, I just want to say a few more words about our activities during this comment period, which ended on 30th of September. And first, I just want to publicly thank team for the enormous effort, in particular, fieldwork effort, and Nick and Ilhong, who led this exercise and spent many, many hours talking to companies and working through the exercise. Next, due to COVID pandemic, almost all of our outreach meetings were online, and this meant this was, in a way, good because we could have a couple of team members and a board member present at almost every of those meetings. And I want to thank you all for doing that, in particular, in situations where this meant that we sometimes had days with meetings starting very early in the morning and finishing late at night because of different time zones where our stakeholders were based in. And also, I just want to thank Fred and the investor team, and thanks to their enormous effort on the outreach, we managed to have 32 meetings with users of financial statements, and we also managed to have five user-focused webinars in cooperation with CFA societies in different jurisdictions, which were again very well received. And later on, Fred will be the one presenting user feedback paper when we come to it. Also, thanks to work of our multilingual team and also the board members. We were able to run a number of webinars in 6 different languages with our stakeholders across the world, which again were very well received, but were also lots of effort to prepare. So I want to thank you for that. I also want to thank Anna Simpson, who has kind of become a team member during this process, has done a review of academic literature very early on in the project and then spent time with us discussing this with various academic groups, building on this to present you with the literature review paper that you're going to be discussing at this meeting. And finally, while sadly we have terms of some of our team members as well as board advisors have come to the end during this period, we are also excited. You will notice some new faces on the screen today. We are very excited to have Anne McGeekin now formally joined the PFS team, as well as Akila, who is our recently joined assistant technical staff. And I also want to extend my thanks to Rafal, who has stepped in his breaks, mostly in the evenings, sadly, to help us with processing all this feedback. And he will be presenting one of the feedback papers on analysis of operating expenses later on. So before we go on to discuss the specific feedback topic by topic, I just want to pause and see if there's any comments or questions on this general overview.
Well, clearly this has been an enormous and also an enormously fruitful effort by your team. And the effort is reflected in the papers that are presented today. So really well done. Of course, it's too early to give your extend full congratulations, but you're really well on the road. Good, well done. So are there any questions at this moment, or do you want to wait for the specific papers? I think, oh, Sue wants to ask a question.
And this might be too early, Aida, because you might be going to tee up what you want to get from the discussion today, but I was going to ask a question about the discussion and what's helpful for you. Is it okay if I ask that, or were you going to? One thing that struck me as I read some of the papers, and firstly, well done, very super, super impressive analysis and super good overview of the feedback, so really good effort. So I know how much goes into it, so well done to you. But one question I had was, I know that you're interested in areas where we might be interested in you sort of digging a bit deeper into the analysis and helping us understand the reason for some of the feedback. What struck me a little bit on some of the points that were raised was that we might have ideas from other standards and approaches we've taken in other places to address similar issues. Is it useful today as we go through things to flag areas that we think it might be useful to think about to preempt some of the thinking that's going on in sort of towards the next steps? Is that useful in today's discussion? So I'm not sure, for example, whether there's going to be another round of analysis on the issues and it's better to wait till then, or sort of how you're thinking about the best type of input for today to move forward from the staff's perspective.
I mean, thanks, Sue, for raising that. I think for us, the reason we wanted to have this as collaborative discussion and get your input is that will put us in better stead to have as comprehensive research as we can do when we bring the papers for you for decisions. And, you know, we do our utmost to consider other standards and lessons learned from there. But to the extent you do have specific thoughts, I think it will be helpful for the team if you just raise them. Of course, we need to be careful because we are not making any decisions and we don't have full papers. We haven't presented you with full papers to make any decisions on what will work, what will not work. But it is really, the objective is just to make sure we don't miss anything that you see as a key points, or make sure we do any research work that you think is needed before you can make a decision on a way forward, rather than telling us this later on and then us having to do repeat papers. So that's really the intention. So please, as many points as you can think of, bring it, but don't make decisions today.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Françoise? Françoise.
Welcoming. Good morning, and thank you for the for all this analysis that is really already very much in depth, I would think. But so, as you, I mean, I want to be careful that my comments fit into what you're expecting from us today. But my understanding is that you want input into your deliberations. So I guess comments that could lead there could be helpful, but you stop me if I'm wrong. I think from that paper, that paper shows that the overall feedback is positive. And so that our main proposals seem to be well supported. And that inspires me that despite the fact that we have received a number of interesting proposals, and given the urgency that users have shown in this project right from the start, I would not want to delay the completion of this project because of re-exposure, because we would like to get into possible, interesting, good, positive tracks that are eventually opened from the comments we've received. That would be my first comment. The second comment I would have, in fact, it's a point on disaggregation principles. When you mentioned that those who participated in the field work generally didn't have to make any adjustments because of disaggregation principles. This inspires me that when we run field tests, field work that in that manner, we have in fact participating generally the best students in the class. So those who would have eventually already done, completed the appropriate judgments based on the existing literature. And I would not stop on that basis to think that what we have proposed would not be a positive addition, and in particular in terms of auditing and supporting auditing and enforcement. And my third comment relates to the call in many places for more guidance, and especially when it comes from fieldwork. I think more guidance means easier first implementation. I think it also means greater convergence in the long run. So I would really, as a general comment, very carefully consider the various requests we've received for more guidance, because I think that they reduce the cost of the change and also facilitate serving our strategic objective at convergence. So these were my overall comments. I hope they help.
Okay, any other comments? I don't think that's the case. So we can move on to the next paper. Carleen, are you going to present that?
Yes, I am. Good morning, everyone. So let's start with agenda paper 21B, which summarizes the feedback on the proposed categories and subtotals in the statement of profit or loss. And this first paper focuses on what we call the general model, whereas feedback on our specific proposals for entities with particular main business activities are discussed in the next paper. So that's 21C. So in 21B, we report that most respondents, including users, agreed with our proposals to introduce defined subtotals and categories in the statement of profit or loss, with many saying that the proposals have the potential to provide useful information and to improve comparability between entities. Now, there were two particular concerns that many respondents expressed in relation to the proposals. So first, many expressed concerns about the proposal to classify income and expenses from foreign exchange differences, derivatives, and hedging instruments in the categories to which they relate. And those respondents questioned whether the benefits of those proposals would outweigh the costs. And then secondly, many respondents said it's confusing that the proposed labels for the categories in the statement of profit or loss, so that's operating, investing, and financing, that they're similar to the labels that we use in the statement of cash flows, although the content of the categories is different between the P&L and the statement of cash flows. And then some respondents expressed some additional concerns. So some said the definitions of the categories are insufficiently robust, and said that the board would need to provide additional guidance to achieve comparability. Some respondents disagreed with defining the operating category as a default category. And then finally, some respondents expressed concerns about the proposal to classify income and expenses from cash and cash equivalents in the financing category. So that brings us to the first question for the board on page 26. So as Aida explained, to help us prepare for the re-deliberations, we are asking the board whether there is any feedback that was unclear, any feedback that provides new information or new arguments, or whether there is any feedback that needs further research. So with that, I'll turn it over to the board. Thank you.
Nick.
Thank you, Hans. Thank you. And first of all, could I add my congratulations to the team on the huge effort that they've done here. I remember very early on, as COVID became apparent, having a conversation with staff saying, how are we going to manage this now through this period? And we've managed it, it seems to me, in an exemplary fashion. So well done. Just looking at the issues here and a couple of the issues that Carlene raised already, I think clearly we are going to have to go back and look at the challenges around foreign exchange differences. The conversations that I participated in with users and preparers suggest that we have some fairly difficult issues here, in part reflecting differences in how preparers think about those differences, whether they have a central treasury, where they net those all off together and manage them on that way, whereas other preparers will allocate them to different categories, as suggested in the exposure draft. I'm not so concerned about the proposed overlap in the labelling of the categories between the cash flow statement and the P&L. I think clearly those are apparent in how we express our proposals, but when the output gets played back to the users of financial statements, I don't suspect that they will look at a P&L which is labelled operating, investing, and financing. It will be in that order, and so I think it will matter much less to them than it does to the respondents to our proposals. I think the big issue for me here, however, which I would like to think about, and I'd like to go back and look at the field work, is what may be left in investing. And already we've seen some comments that there won't be much in the investing category for some companies. Clearly, we have decisions to make about how we deal with joint ventures and associates. I don't want to preempt that. But I just wonder whether it becomes quite a small category, and in that respect, whether it helps or whether it hinders the overall proposals. So I think it would be worthwhile going back, looking at the output from the fieldwork in particular, what is left in investing. We've already seen some comments from a number of respondents who have some discomfort that, for instance, cash and cash equivalent is in financing, which I think is the right place for it to be, but returns on other investments, which they in their mind may wish to net off against or include alongside cash and cash equivalents, are included in investing. So for me, that's the big question here. What is the utility of the investing category? So yeah, some help there would be welcome. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Nick. Anne.
I'm glad to be second, so I can also give congratulations to Aida and the team on this incredible work and their sustained effort over so many months. So thank you for all the papers. A couple of opening comments in response to the comments that have been made about what's the way forward. And one of the things that jumps out to me is that the PFS proposals had lots of high-level requirements and guidance based on principles and concepts, because we were trying to accommodate the diversity that's out there. And I think we have to stay with that. So even though in the papers we get some very detailed feedback and some very specific views on specific items, I still think we have to stay with our main purpose, which is trying to create a framework and a structure that the majority of the people are going to be able to operate within, and they're going to have to make these judgments. So that may mean that we have to give some more thought to sharpening up definitions or clarifying definitions or concepts. As some of the papers that we'll get to talk about the interrelationship of parts of standards and concepts. So I think there is some more work to come out of that, but I don't think we should lose sight of that was the framework and that was the way that we were trying to approach it. Because we've got that. And then on the other hand, we've also got some very specific statements of what where items have to go and what has to be done. So we've got this blend somehow of these a framework and concepts with really specific rules. And we ended up with those rules by the end of the time before we issued the ED, because we were trying to cover off as many items as possible. So I think there's a tension between the concepts that will work for a number of people and then the rules that we're putting there to facilitate how this will work. And so as we go on into our work, I would just say that I don't think we should lose sight of the framework that we're trying to achieve. And as we go on with our discussions today, I know that there'll be more points raised about areas we need to look at, areas where we've got a lot of feedback and people are saying, give us more clarity on what you mean by, for example, main business activity. One other area that jumped out to me is that I think we have to think a lot about is the relationship with the cash flow statement, because we actually want to change as little as possible there. But we're starting to dig into that. And then we've got our eyes on the agenda consultation, the feeling that people are going to come back saying, you need to do some work on the cash flow statement for these reasons. So I think we've got a challenge there, working out how much to do this time that relates to cash flow statement and how much will be in the future. And I'll stop there. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Tadeo.
Thank you, Hans. First, congratulations to the team for the very hard work, including for preparing this feedback summary. That was really impressive work, a lot of details, and especially the work for collecting this feedback. It was really impressive. Thank you very much. I reading the papers, one thing that draw my attention is that some of the comments seems to try to sort out some diversity in terms of classification that is already there in IS1. I mean, that probably because of the lack of some definitions, but the point is that it is not created by the definition of the categories. For example, just to give an example, on paragraph 38, when referred to the incremental expenses, at least for me, it's not clear whether the problem of the diversity was already there or whether this was aggravated by the creation of the categories. Another point is that in terms of the finance component, sometimes we can see some discussion, but actually, if it is relevant, the finance component in a payable or receivable, it will make clear the classification. Sometimes we are discussing something that is probably not material, because if it is material, in my view, it will be clear what the classification should be. But I think that it's a comment. And one feedback that is, at least I didn't get that from the paper, is in relation to how much of the stakeholders do agree with the proposal for gain losses on hedging instrument in designated hedge relationship. I didn't actually get this feedback. I got it's good comments on when it's not designated hedging relationship, but I was looking for when you are in a designated relationship, hedging relationship. This is something that would be good if we can find this better in the papers. That's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Tadeo. Jian Chao.
Thank you, Hans. First of all, I also would like to congratulate the staff, very good papers, and also very large numbers of outreach activities was conducted during the comment period, and including the field work. Just a couple of comments. When I read the paper and some of the comment letters, I also think about, as Anne said, that what's the initial objective of the project, because it seems that a lot of comments, some comments relate to other projects, for example, cash flow statement, something like that. So I think of this project, we should still focus on how to improve the performance statement rather than other statement. This is the key. Otherwise, it will be the scope of this project will be very broad, and those issues cannot be resolved in a short period. Secondly, it's also related to the overlap between performance statement and the cash flow statement. I agree with Nick's point that from my point of view, I also don't worry too much about the overlap between two statements. If we focus on how to improve the performance statement, I think we should focus on this, because although there is a definition of operating, financing, investing activities in cash flow statement in there, but first we should improve performance data first, and then maybe in the future we should think about how to improve the cash flow statement. So I think this is the second point. The third point is that I think most of the stakeholders actually agree with to introduce those subtotals and to introduce new, additional categories. Many issues actually came out because we didn't define some of the activities, some of the categories. So it caused a little bit of confusion. So I think at this moment or in the next step, maybe we should think about whether it's possible to define, for example, operating activities, for example, what's the meaning of main business activities, what's the meaning of the in course of main business activities. That is really the key to classify those income and expenses, which category they belong to. So I think it's worthwhile to clarify, to even to define those, particularly the main business activities, and then try to clarify the operating category. I think it's worthwhile. But once we are going to define that or clarify that, it's possible, because currently we are applying default approach. Once we define those terms, it's possible some of the income expenses currently would belong to the operating category. Maybe will not belong to. So maybe it's possible in the end, maybe we needed to introduce additional, other category or other business, main business category, something like that. But I think it's worthwhile to explore whether it's possible. And then it will also reduce the concern for some jurisdictions which have already defined operating profit very, clearly, and they don't want to, to lose your to introduce more some additional item to be included operating profits for some, for example, donation, something like that. So this is the third point. I think it's worthwhile to explore. The first point is about foreign exchange differences. When I conduct some outreach activities, stakeholders also raise that many companies actually, when they manage those foreign exchange risks, they manage at the central treasury department level, on the net basis. So it's very difficult for them to allocate in the foreign exchange differences in different categories. And they also don't think that it will really provide useful information to the users. So I think we should think about that, whether comparing the cost and the benefit, we should think about that, whether we can provide a more realistic approach for them. Also, when I read one of the field work report, the company said that really difficult to manage it, to allocate that portion into different categories. So this is the first point I would like to raise. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Jen Chow. Then I'll give the floor to Françoise.
Thank you. Well, I think it's going to be quite a difficult task to respond to all that feedback that we've received, and to your questions. I think what you've provided is clear. In terms of directions for, how we could redeliberate issues and try to, in fact, adjust what should be in one or the other category. I would not discard the comment that we've had on the cash flow statement and the inconsistency in our labeling lightly, because language is key in communication, and that comment has been provided many times. But in line with what I said earlier, I would not make this the project for revising the cash flow statement in depth. So I would nevertheless consider better alignment with the cash flow statement when that is feasible, and avoid labeling conflicts when they remain conflicts in substance. And that could be matched with redeliberations of how to better match the financing category with the original concept of profit before financing and tax. So helping compare similar entities with different financial position structures. Because a number of issues seems to arise from there. Or at least a number of comments suggest doing a different split there. And I would also try to avoid presentation mismatches. In other words, separating income and expenses arising from assets and liabilities that are managed together, because I think subtotals are important for showing economic effects. But also telling about stewardship. And I'm sensitive, and I accept that, because we've been in those debates for many years. I accept that I may have a European bias on this issue, but I'm interested in the proposals to consider showing the cost of net debt in the performance statement. Some commentators and they come from Europe have said so. And I think that could also be part of considering a better alignment between the information we get from the cash flow statement and the related analysis of financing liabilities and the performance statement.
Okay. Let me see, then the next in line is Mary.
Okay, thanks Hans. I have comments about several specific paragraphs in terms of things I think it would be helpful to have come back for a bit more discussion. And then that leads me to some overall comments. And some of the ones I'm going to mention as individuals aren't necessarily big things, but they're things where I think just a little more consideration would be good. Francois was just talking about her desire for the net debt expense in the P&L. And when I read paragraph 48A, I guess before I decided whether or not I wanted to do anything more, I guess I wanted to understand first what the barriers were and how big an issue it would be if we wanted to try and address it, because it wasn't immediately clear to me, and I know I'm being asked to be spoon-fed here, but you know, you've gotten me accustomed to too much luxury in terms of the quality of staff responses. I have some overall caution that may be different from others in terms of how quickly we respond to "we need more guidance" as a general request. I think where we've had questions for guidance, maybe our first challenge should be, is the underlying objective and the framework for analysis clear enough? Do we have a clear enough signpost? And then once we've looked at that to see if that's maybe the underlying root issue, think only then about maybe more guidance, because I think it would be so easy to load this standard up with lots and lots of guidance and examples that we would end up losing sight of the core principles, the same way that you don't get a good view of a major building if it's surrounded by lots of things that are built up on its periphery. So when I say let's look further at something, it's not because I think we automatically have to. I think we should first look at those comments as almost diagnostic. You know, what does it tell us about the underlying? So, for example, with paragraph 54, I think it would be helpful for us to think in our analysis about the alignment between classification and some of the IFRS 9 solely payments of principal and interest, and just see whether or not we think there's a comment about the fit. Paragraph, sorry, just have to look at my notes, 60B, which is saying, okay, you know, you're treating pension funds one way and then other funds like decommissioning funds in a different way. And while I have sympathy for that comment, I think we should be very cautious about adding complexity to the standard. And, you know, pensions is kind of a well-known, well-established, cuts across many different industries. And so I'd say maybe look at 60B, but I really caution that there would be complexity, and the idea that we should introduce an option. I think when we think about the papers that we have later on about eliminating options in the statement of cash flows, that seemed very straightforward. You'll get the information either way. You'll have to disclose what the option is. And the overwhelming feedback was, it's harder for users if you give preparers options about where to present things. So again, I think I don't rule out creating options, but I think it should be a very high barrier before we do that. Another comment is paragraph 63C, where there was an argument that because something is included in working capital, it automatically should become an operating line item. I don't think that logic holds, but I guess maybe worth asking if you have time to take a look at that. Others have talked about the foreign exchange gain or losses. Again, I can see why we may need to do some more thinking around the costs and benefits, even if we decide to end up in the same person place. And you know, there was a comment that seemed very easy to embrace about we should at a minimum avoid creating new inconsistencies between the P&L and statement of cash flows. And while I can understand that, I think it actually could force us into a lot of complexity in the standard to do that, with a lot of, in order to avoid this, we're going to tell you that you have to do this thing in this way. rather than following the principles that we have developed for classification. So I think it's good to keep an eye on that, but I would not have it be an overarching principle or objective. And that kind of comes back to the point that Francoise and others raised about labeling inconsistencies and how much do we do it. Well, on the one hand, I agree with Nick and Jin Chao that people are not going to present their P&L with labels of operating, financing, investing, financing in the way that we might do in slides. And so it may be more about the labels in our standard and how we shape the discussion of them. So maybe we should think about whether there's any difference in labels that we could use to avoid embedding it. But I don't think it's, I think we absolutely have to avoid the scope creep of this also becoming a more fundamental reconsideration of the statement of cash flows. So I think we have to be very, very cautious there. Going back to my point about being selective in terms of adding more guidance that, because it's been requested in so many places throughout here, I think that the point about main business activities is one that we should look further at both the clarity of our principle and how much support we need to provide to that principle to get the right balance of operationality and complexity in the standard. Nick mentioned, flagged up something that we may discuss later on in the integral, non-integral paper about how much is left in investing. I'll just leave a marker that I think that that's something that we may want to think about the interaction with materiality, maybe rather than losing a category that's part of the structure. It may not be a big deal for many entities, but there are some for which I think it's quite an important disaggregation. And then I think that brings me to the end of the list that ends with congratulations. I saved mine for the end instead of starting out because, again, a tremendous accomplishment in terms of parsing this into a number of very thoughtful and well-integrated papers. So, well done.
Thank you, Mary Stu. Oh,
thanks. So looking at this paper and trying to think about the best way forward, a couple of thoughts and suggestions for the staff. So I think to avoid being pulled into too many different directions and sort of getting pulled down rabbit holes, we need to sort of step back and see whether we still think that the basic idea that we had was the right idea. And it seems to me that we've got a lot of support for this basic idea that the financing category is separated out so that you can look at the compare entities and then think about the financing as a separate category, separate factor, and this basic idea and to consider whether we still agree with the basic idea, which was that you would expect investors to think slightly differently about the returns from investing activities than those from operating. Now, if we still think that that basic structure of operating, investing and financing is the right one, I think I would be less concerned about thinking about whether the fact that there may not be a lot in investing for some entities matters, because if we really believe that it still makes sense to be able to see that separately, then that should be something we should hold on to as an idea. And I think that that is important, particularly because I think even though there's a lot of support for the operating category, there is still a thread going through of people who think that there's a bit too much in operating that goes beyond the main business, that includes things that are unusual items and things like that. And I think maybe the investing category helps a little bit with those concerns. Obviously, the feedback we've got on things like derivatives and foreign currency is really important for us to look at from a cost-benefit, operationality and complexity perspective. And so we need to look at that carefully. But again, I think we need to decide what our anchor is and try and stick with that anchor. Because I think there's a bit of a sort of maybe suspicion or concern at the back of my head that one of the reasons why people might like to have an idea that foreign currency should go down to financing is because they're sort of hoping that that's going to be something that's not given as much attention as some of the stuff further up the income statement. If we really believe that financing is there as a section to enable this sort of separate analysis of the effect of the differences between financing structures between entities, and if the foreign currency type fluctuations are coming about because of, you know, the revenue and operational type things that you're doing that happen in foreign currencies, I'm not sure I'm so convinced that that should be down in the financing part of the structure. And so I think we just need to be careful not to be pushed in a direction that doesn't really join trying to think about the structure to facilitate financial analysis and investor perspectives. So I'd constantly be coming back to the structure and does putting it in this section, not just to address appropriately cost-benefit considerations, but to still get the set of information that's meeting the objectives we're trying to meet from a user information perspective. And I think if we try and keep some of those parameters in mind, we have anchors that will make our decision-making easier and be more disciplined. Now, from time to time, we might depart from that, but let's make a really conscious departure that in this case, because of cost-benefit or something, will make a difference, but the basic idea would ideally be whatever it is. And so that's just my suggestion.
Thank you, Sue. Bruce.
Thanks, Hans. I'll just try to get to some of the points that I had here. Firstly, I just want to say that when I went through the papers, there seems to be a lot of identified inconsistencies and calls for additional guidance and et cetera. I just want to ensure in my mind that we stick to the principle that the standard should be principle-based. This means, yes, preparers may need to apply judgment when applying some of these definitions, but I think we've got to accept we're never going to be able to cover every case, and in my mind, it's acceptable that somewhere along the line they may need to actually apply judgment in doing this. With that being said, I do think there's a bit of work to be done in some of them. For example, I do think to start off with, we need to look at that financing definition. There was a comment in the paper, I can't remember the paragraph, where somebody said that when you actually read through the definition, it sounds similar to the SPPI test, the IFRS 9. And when you kind of look at it that way, you can see how for some users or some preparers, that could create confusion, given that they're not exactly defined the same, but they sound very similar. So I think we've just got to be conscious about that, because I think there is that concern that people are going to put things in the wrong category. The other one I just want to point out was that I know in paragraph 24, we talk about the perceived perception that there's a tension between the fact that we're calling operating residual category, yet on the other side, we're also saying this is your main business activity. I do see how somebody could look at this and see that the two kind of do conflict a bit. Just the one is saying this is your main business activity, but actually it's a residual. So I just think that there is some work we can do on those. The other comment I wanted to make was on the Forex split. I do think this can create a lot of practical problems for preparers, especially where this isn't the way they're running their business or their treasury function. This could create very material challenges, and we've got to make sure that in the back of our minds we're ensuring that the making people do this, the cost of them doing it is not exceeding the benefit. Now, I don't know if this means the decision we need to make is about leaving it how it was proposed or whether we move back into a financing or operating or an accounting policy, however it's going to be, but I just want to make sure that we do consider the cost of that, because I think the feedback we got was a lot of people found this would be incredibly onerous, and not a lot of people said to me they saw a lot of value in that. Last comment I had was just around this question on labeling. I do find the labeling confusing. The one thing that concerns me about that is we seem to be very cautious throughout the body of literature to ensure we're consistent with the use of various definitions. And yet somehow here we've decided we're going to step away from that principle. I sometimes think that, yes, us as IFRS techies, we do see principle and we understand, yes, it's different in the statement of financial performance as opposed to the cash mandate. But I think we've got to bear in mind that when you do get out there and start speaking to preparers and speaking to users, a lot of them are going to see that these terms are the same. And I think for a lot of them, when they're looking at performance statements generally, and they see two things being operating, investing, and financing, as I said, I think we've got to be very careful that where we've been strict about using definitions, here we're choosing not to. I'm not saying that this has got to completely reopen IFRS, I7, but I do think we've got to accept that this is going to be confusing. And maybe the answer then is to say this could lead into a project on I7. But I just think we can't just leave that alone, because I think we may not necessarily get the right answer then.
Thank you, Bruce. Rika, then.
Thank you, Hans.
Thank you,
Thank you for the staff all work done, and also very good analysis on the paper. It's all helpful. And first of all, I think when considering the to have more stable platform of the primary financial statement towards the evolution of more digital database reporting and communication, I think it's very important to have a more consistent format of primary financial statement with more disclosure. But having said that, and even if most stakeholders support the default approach, it's very helpful to give more clarification to factors supposed to be included in the operating category, especially the meaning of main business activities should be clarified. This will be the basis of clarification to distinct what should be included operating and other categories. So, and I found that identifying what the main business are relatively easy, but to what extent of main business activities should be included is another issue of the discussion. So I think that should be clarified, because I think some confusion in practice when doing the field work. And another thing I want to ask the staff to explore is about the distinction between the investing and financing. Especially as an alternative, some suggested about merging those two categories, but having the right level of disaggregated line items. I would just want to know the pros on the cons of this alternative. That will be help to understand which direction we should conclude in the future. That's all for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Rika. Martin?
Yeah, thanks, Hans. I also want to start with a big thanks to the staff for all this good and hard work. And for me, against the main issues based on this paper or for this paper was also based on the outreach I have done here, and especially in Germany, was I think we have to clarify that main business activity, how it then relies to operating, because many people also thought, okay, is it default category? So maybe also reflecting non-main business activity. So there was a big confusion regarding what we mean by main business activity and how it relates that operating isn't default category. My explanation was always, I said, okay, maybe we use this main business activities because it was more in relation to these associates where we want to have it than this main business activity for the associated then in this line with together with operating. But maybe I was wrong, but I think at least that was big confusion when I had done outreach, and we have to clarify that. Second, I think, okay, it was also this kind of foreign exchange gains and losses, and if we would stay with our proposal, I think many people said, okay, that will not be in line with their treasury activities, and I agree to that. And even then to split it, I think, is not only a cost element, it is a kind of, is it even possible if you're doing your hedge accounting or your foreign exchange management in a net position way and not allocating it to different kind of categories. So I think we have to work on that, and I think to when we go back to a decision paper, I would also be interested maybe from a user side perspective. Man, is it so important to align this kind of position, or would it be also be possible to aggregate it all in one position? Or even if treasury activities are different, maybe then we allow a kind of option. I think we need this kind of information, because from my reading of this paper, man, that was at least the biggest cost benefit issue which we have for these proposals, and I don't know when we stick to our proposals to align that to the categories, if really the cost benefit is then okay. Thanks.
Thank you, Martin. Françoise, I wanted to come back in.
Yes, thank you. I mean, it's want to clarify my point about guidance. I certainly support that we keep our standard principle based. I mean, to me, that's paramount. However, I think we are doing all this job in order to make performance statements more comparable from entity to entity. So there is a lot of thinking around comparability. And requests for guidance that we receive, and in particular those that emanate from fieldwork, show that in fact, in number of areas, those who have tried to apply have either not have had a basis for exercising judgment. So it's not that they were left to exercising that judgment. They didn't have the proper basis for exercising judgment. So they were missing the guidance that helps decide whether it should be one or the other category. So I'm thinking of guidance in those terms. What helps me comply with the principle and not put this item in that category? That to me, this is a rule. It is not guidance. Guidance to me is give me the keys so that I can exercise my judgment and allocate to the various categories. And if we are not able to develop that guidance, I think we have a flaw in the standard that would be that we would be issue, and we open the door to agenda decisions, interpretations, or unidentified, and that would be the worst, unidentified lacks of comparability when our primary objective is to promote comparability. So I think we should not take requests for guidance lightly. And that's why I chose my overall first comment. I think that they're key, but guidance understood away from what a rule could be. It's the basis. People need the basis to exercise their judgment. And in a number of instances, they've told us we don't have it.
Okay, Françoise, thank you. Finally, Tom.
So let me extend my congratulations to the staff as well. And I think it's worth noting that this has been tried before, and fairly recently there was a comprehensive effort that was abandoned. And I just want to say that not only am I thankful to staff, but I have confidence to staff that we won't abandon this and we will actually come to a successful conclusion, although the challenges are non-trivial. So just highlight a few things I think that I'd like staff to think about going forward. Jin Chao mentioned about developing principles more or better. And I think, and Mary talked about not overloading with too much guidance. I'm sympathetic to what Françoise just said. But I think for sure, if you want to avoid detailed guidance down the road, the principles have to be clear. So I would think about that. In other words, you're making a choice. If you choose less clear principles, there'll be a demand for guidance. There'll be things sent in to the interpretations committee. And I think it's really important that we decide where we come down. I'd prefer clear principles. The other thing, and this shows up in every paper, but I'll raise it here because I think it's something that you need to think about as you go throughout, is the question of persistence. We did not build in persistence directly into anything, and that may well be the right answer. But if, for example, you read paragraph 22 and things on MPMs, you'll see persistence keeps popping up as a background thing that people are trying to get. They're trying to discern what is the persistence of various items on the statement of financial performance. And so how do we do that if we go through? Because, for example, when we get there, neither nature or function splits naturally on more versus less persistent. So if we're going to follow that, then how, as a second order issue, do we deal with persistence? So I'd like you to think about that just as you go through everything, just to keep it in mind, because it seems to be a regular request. On labeling, it seemed to me that the one that upset people the most was investing. Some people would say they're upset with all three, but then they focus on investing. And I, for example, I know that we had lots and lots of people say they really wanted an operating category. Those people didn't say, but we'd really don't use the same terms, so think up something else. So I think we're likely to keep operating. Again, so on labeling, I think maybe we could do something with investing. I'd be hesitant on operating and financing, which are linked to a whole pile of other things. On that investing, as Nick said, is small. One thing I'd like you to think about there, and I think somebody else raised it, is some people see investing is going to basically be picking up excess cash, and is excess cash equivalent to cash and cash equivalents, and the whole thing comes back to financing. I think you should think about that argument. On foreign exchange, I agree with everything everybody said. It looks really costly, in which case we need to think about where does it go. I think Sue's comment about just lumping in another category where it doesn't fit very well isn't necessarily a good solution. So, and if we do move it, we should be clear about what we're losing, because I think we're losing something. And I think, and the last thing, Sue, echo Sue's comment. In operating, basically, we've got two elements. We've got the main business activities, and we've got all the rest, which is the residual part. And I think we need to think about there being two elements in there. And I think maybe the going back to the principal definition will help. And that also links to persistence, because I think a lot of the less persistent ones, which people raise in, for example, paragraph 22, go to the residual and not the main. So again, I'm not suggesting we change our fundamental principles, but as second order, how can we help people to capture those things and understand those things, and so we get the best information out there? But at the end, I'll again echo that I'm really confident that in the end we're going to get somewhere good.
Okay, Tom, thank you. That brings us to the conclusion of the discussion of this paper, or unless Aida would like to say something, no, that's not necessary, or Carleen. Then, Carleen, you can continue with the next paper.
Okay, so that's 21C. And that paper summarizes the feedback on the specific requirements that the board proposed for entities that invest in the course of their main business activities or that provide financing to customers as a main business activity. And most respondents agree with the proposals to classify more items in the operating category for those entities. So they agree with classifying income and expenses from investments made in the course of an entity's main business activities in operating, and with classifying some income and expenses from financing activities and cash equivalents if the entity provides financing to customers as a main business activity. However, many respondents said it was again important for the board to provide additional guidance to achieve comparability between entities. And in particular on this paper, respondents suggested the board should clarify the terms main business activities and in the course of main business activities, because those terms play a very important role in the determination of operating profit. And then finally, many respondents disagreed with the accounting policy choice that we proposed for entities that provide financing to customers as a main business activity, mainly because they think it would undermine comparability. And some respondents suggested replacing that accounting policy choice with something else, like, for example, a practical expedient. So again, that brings us to the questions. And it, like with the previous paper, it would be helpful if you could indicate whether there's any feedback that's unclear, any feedback that provides new information or that needs further research. So let's open it up again for discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Carleen. Sue.
Thanks. So a couple of thoughts on the analysis in this paper. So one thought was on the investments made in the course of the main business activities, whatever the words are, and the observations that some people made that they were concerned that companies would put their profitable investments in their main business activities and their unprofitable investments in investing to try and sort of achieve outcomes. One thing that struck me there was I had not sort of consciously, but sort of had sort of thought that we were thinking more of a business model type thinking. So if I use IFRS 9, sorry, as a comparison, in IFRS 9, we're very clear that you don't think about what your objective is for how you manage something on an investment by investment basis. You look at the sort of way that you run a part of your business, and then everything that's in that business is classified in a particular way. And so I had one suggestion was that if we're going to keep working on this, that maybe we should look at the articulation of the main business activities and make more of, or at least analyze whether it's appropriate to talk about the analysis being based on an assessment of fact of how you're running the business, et cetera, the same sort of thinking that we've got in IFRS 9 and that it's not an intent by investment type model. Both because I think that's what we meant, but it also would address that sort of cherry-picking point. Along with that, I think there was some concern that people's main business activities might sort of flip-flop, 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 and that would cause problems for comparability and consistency of reporting. And so I think we should think about when we would expect main business activities to change and how frequently and whether disclosure around that might provide some discipline. Then a couple of just specific points. One was that a few people made a point here, and it came up in different papers in different contexts about the question of whether the analysis of whether something was a main business activity is based on, could differ for a subsidiary versus at a group level. So whether that changes within the group. My gut is the answer is yes, but I think it's something specific that we should look at so that we know what we mean and that people know what we are intending, because I think that's a fair question. And the final observation is that I saw in this paper, and I heard it in a few meetings that I was at with the banks, they're sort of saying that they might be only left with pension amounts in the financing category, so therefore they don't think they should have to put that in financing. I would resist those sorts of arguments, sort of going back to the point that I made in the first paper. I think we need to have a structure that we believe in. Then if people don't end up with much in a particular category, then materiality, of course, is always a consideration. But I wouldn't start changing the model to suit banks because they think they don't have a different case for the allocation of that amount or where that gets put just because they're a bank. And so I wouldn't be sort of countenancing that type of argument. Sorry, and one other point. On the choice, it seemed to me that a lot of banks most banks that I spoke to seemed to think that they would have pretty much everything in operating. So I don't think it would be the end of the world to remove the policy choice. But I was interested that a couple of banks in the field work decided to separate out the financing costs on their sort of more regulatory capital type instruments and put them in financing, which is what we had in the back of our minds, I think, when we designed that category. So I just thought that was interesting, and I wonder whether those banks would be upset if that choice was taken away from them, and so I don't know whether we have that information.
Okay, thank you, Sue. Tadeo.
Thank you, Hans. Actually, my comment is on paragraph 23b, when some few respondents actually talk about the suggestions. They suggest that entities whose only main business activities providing finance to customers should be allowed to classify all financing expense in operating category. It's just a clarification here whether they want to prohibit manufacturers that finance customers to classify their income and expenses as operating and leave this option only for financial institutions, or actually if they are financing customers, they can classify, but they don't have the option to reclassify everything to operate. It's just to make a bit clear what's the suggestion here. And on letter T on this same paragraph, I think that's very similar to what Sue said in terms of the business model, but actually looking from the internal management report, it's also something to look as an option to try to understand how management is looking at that business. Thank you.
Thank you, Tadeu. Françoise?
Caroline suggested replying to Tadeu. Do you want to give her the floor before I speak?
Okay, Caroline?
Just on that specific question that Tadeu asked about those respondents that suggested that only entities whose only main business activity is providing financing to customers, that specific suggestion, I think they suggested that the sort of default position should be that all entities should be required to make the split, and so they should allocate the financing expenses that relate to the provision of financing in operating and then the rest in financing. So that's what, for example, a car manufacturer would do. And then the sort of second option of classifying all financing in operating, that would only be available to those entities whose only main business activity is providing financing to customers.
Okay, thank you, Caroline. Françoise?
Thank you. I had kept my comment on main business activities on this paper. I mean, I reacted to the comments in the earlier paper, but in this one, I think that the definition or the concept is key, because it determines the scope of the exception. So we can't do without. I mean, we could still have the residual category for operating and forget about main business activities. But here we can't forget about it. We absolutely have to make sure, and we consider this, considering all comments received, having in mind that we don't want anyone that should benefit from the exception. There is an example given in the paper that would not be able to use it. And also eventually link better this notion to other aspects in IFRS, whether it's the ordinary activities of IFRS 15, whether it is, at least for some entities, IFRS 8, or eventually link to other notions like business models or I don't know what, but other than that, I react very negatively to comments suggesting that one could select one's main business activities, and that would mean that things that do not meet the definitions of investing and or financing would not be in operating. That is something that I cannot take as a consequence. I would wish to reconsider the accounting policy choice. I mean, I was against it in the first place because, I mean, I think this project, as I said, is for comparability as a main objective. Now, I remember that this issue was difficult. The comments we receive doesn't show any easy way. So let's see whether we can do better. And that's it for this paper. Thank you.
Thank you, Françoise. Rika?
I think Jinchao one.
Jinchao, you want to come first, please?
I think a Nick.
Sorry. No, sorry.
Jinchao, yes.
No.
Sorry.
Nick.
Thank you, Hans. So I agree with Françoise. We have to have a clear definition for main business activities because it is the basis of the exception. But I wonder, with the benefit of hindsight, whether we've conflated operating as a residual and thinking at the same time about operating as a main business activity. And if we go back to our process and how we got here, we did agree, first of all, to define operating as a residual. It's almost a two-step approach. Define operating as a residual. In that way, you avoid all questions about does auxiliary income go into operating or does it go somewhere else? Do items that are perceived to be non-recurring, are they operating or are they not? So very clearly, first step, operating as a residual. And then when we came to the term main business activities, that was simply as a construct to deal with those entities where our default, our starting position would classify some items in financing or investing and to allow to move those up into the operating section. And I think if we go back and describe that as a two-step process, we at least may some of the controversy or some of the doubts about or some of the pushback, you know, oh, this is a small part of what I do. It's not my main business activity. This is a non-recurring item. It's not my main business activity. So I think just thinking about the wording there may help bring some clarity. The second item, which I think we do need to think about, and I do have some sympathy for, is the request from insurers in terms of those associates and joint ventures, where the returns on those investments are directly attributable to policyholders. And whether, in a similar vein to other investments, whether we would permit moving those up into the operating section. I think we just need to ask the question there. I'm not going to say anything more about accounting policy choice. I think we do need to address that, but I think that's clear from the papers already. Thank you.
Thanks, Nick. Bruce.
Thanks, Hans. Yeah, I'm not going to repeat the comments, but I think a lot of people have already made around things like the operating category and the accounting policy. So I agree with all those that we do need to relook at them again. I would just comment again on those that, I mean, to me, this is once again an area where we need to ensure that obviously we have a principle that the people could apply judgment on that. But I do agree with Francois's previous comment on the last paper. We do need that guidance around it, and I think that is important. Just one additional comment I want to make on this was what stood out for me on this paper was really when we start looking at the areas around consolidation. I think those were raised in about paragraph 47, 48, but there were a couple of areas where people consistently mentioned that having these differences could create a bit of a challenge as far as consolidated groups go, where you've got different accounting potentially in the parent and in the group, where you're trying to look at what your main business activity within a subsidiary, does that filter down a lot? So I just think we've got to look at that maybe, I don't know if the staff have looked at it in a bit more detail to kind of understand just a little bit more around how this could raise a bit of a challenge, where there are differences within those groups and how those will obviously feed up on consolidation.
Mary?
Okay. Few thoughts about issues raised in this paper. Let me join the chorus about main business activity, and given the importance of that, taking what we have heard from both the field work and the comment letters, and thinking about some mix of improvements, clarifications of principle, additional guidance, you know, framework that's not a fundamental reconsideration. It just, you know, that's so central to operationalizing our big picture that gathering all the feedback and thinking about that is I think high on the to-do list. In terms of particularly main business activity interacting with investing and thinking about the comments that Sue made at the beginning, I guess it makes me question a statement that's in paragraph 7 of this paper that says the determination of whether an investment is made in the course of the main business activity is an asset by asset determination. And I guess I see some tension between that and the notion of business model as a fact. So, you know, asset by asset feels almost more like the designation idea. So maybe let's go back and think about whether that all hangs together. I think it was Nick who talked about, shifting gears, let me move on to the second issue in this paper. Sue raised it, and I think Bruce did too, about whether main business activity changes as you move up the consolidation. As Sue said, I think we just have to be explicit about our thinking on this. So make sure we addressed it. Shifting again, a point that Nick raised about in the context of insurers and certain investments. I was carrying forward the thinking about integral, non-integral, and being really thinking about investments accounted for using the equity method. It's really important to me that not become part of operating. But then I realized that the strength of my view is really linked to an entity that is the general model rather than an entity that has as a main business activity investing. And when you have as your main business activity investing, as a main business activity investing, a lot of stuff that otherwise would not be in operating gets moved up. So I think we should at least think about whether kind of the absolute bar on equity method investees' returns being included in operating should apply if investing is a main business activity, which again piles more pressure on main business activity and needing to get that right. A couple of others have commented, and I'll just reinforce. In paragraph 34, you raised the issue about entities with very little investing questioning why they need to have an additional subtotal. I think I go back to Sue's very helpful strategic advice on the first paper about if we've got the right structure and model, then there are times when materiality might affect the application to a particular entity, but let's not start taking apart the big model for a particular industry or group that we expect to have a particular fact pattern. And then the last thing that I'd ask the staff to think about is main business activity is providing finance to customers. And the interaction of that concept with IFRS 15, if the financing provided to customers is only for the purchase of the entity's products and services, and whether there's anything special about that fact pattern that we need to think about differently from, let's say, a bank. I'm not sure there is, but I think it's one of the later papers recounts some comments about the interaction with some of the requirements in 15 in revenue recognition. And that's what made me come back in the context of this paper and say, let's think about whether provides financing to customers as a main business activity is the same across that whole chunk when you have financial institutions, but also providing, and separately you have entities for which it is a major activity to provide financing for purchase of its own goods and services, but that's the only financing that you provide. So let's think about whether that has any implication. It may not, but I just want to think about it consciously. That's it. Thanks.
Thanks, Mary. Jen Chow.
Thank you, Hans. Looking at this paper, I do feel that clarifying the meaning of main business activities or either in course of main business activities is really necessary and useful. For example, in terms of, as Nick also mentioned, paragraph 16, for some insurance companies, asset management companies, if the investment in those associates and joint ventures accounted for using equity methods are really their main businesses, it will cause, if based on our proposal, the expenses of those investment will be go to the operating, or those when they raise the liabilities will go to the operating, and the income of those investments will go to investment. I'm thinking about this kind of performance statement where will really portray their real performance of operating activities or main business activities. So I think that clarifying the main business activity is the priority. Secondly, regarding to the accounting policy we provide for those companies which provide financing to customers as a main business activities. I personally still think that we should try to minimize the accounting policy choice available for entities as less as possible. I look at that many response actually disagree with this accounting policy, but many banks seem that agree with that. But looking at the reason why the bank agree with that, it seems that first they seem that this kind of business may be their main business activities. So it's come back to the clarification of what's the meaning of main business activities. If we clarify that, whether this kind of issue could resolve at least the part for those banks. Secondly, they think that it's in line with their current practice. I think it may not be a very good argument because current business they are doing so, and then they need this accounting policy. I think we still need to look at the cost and the benefit. If we require them to, only clarify those income and expenses from financial activities which related to the provision of financing and financing to customers, not to be included in the financial currency. So that is a narrow scope. And that means they, comparing to the current practice, they have to split what kind of additional cost will incur. But in the end, I think the benefit, maybe I think users can get more detailed information based on the split approach. So I think we still need to do a little bit further work to balance the cost and the benefit. I'm still not sure because we did many field work. I'm not sure whether there are any banks was included in the field work and whether they have tested this approach. If there are any banks, whether they simply choose the accounting policy choice, or some banks really change their current practice to move to the narrow scope approach. And it will help us to make a decision regarding to the bank's concerns.
Okay, thank you, Jen Chao. Rika.
Thank you, Hans. I will focus on the one point. Try not to echo other board members said already. I think some people in the practice and the stakeholders, the scope of the main business activities and the scope of the activities in the course of the main activities are somehow overlap. Maybe because the notion or extent of the main business activities are diverse. So I think it might be helpful to clarify the concept of many main business activities in different industry, like financial, non-financial, and if those variety of the business were within the same group company, what the main business will be for that company might be a good thing to consider, to explore. And another thing is if we continue to use the concept of the in the course of main business activity or using some other word to explain that kind of the notion, it's important to have more clarity about when and how this notion should be applied when classifying the distinction between operating and the other categories. Thank you.
Sue.
Thanks, Hans. Just a couple of thoughts. Firstly, I was surprised about the amount of confusion on this main business activity point. Somehow we haven't managed to be as clear as I had hoped we could be, because for most companies, they don't need to analyze what their main business activities are. It's only for those with these investment activities and some banks, et cetera, that really need to look at what the main business activities are. But for everybody, you end up with a residual category which includes your main business activities. And it seems to have been far harder to communicate than I had anticipated. But just coming back to my opening comment, I focused on, you know, individual versus business model. But I think the thing that really makes me ponder a little bit is I don't think that our intention was that a company could declare that this was an investment that they were managing individually, and therefore it should be a main business activity, that it was a main business activity that should be elevated. I thought that our design would have been more that it's a statement of fact. Given how you run your business and how you're dealing with this investment and how you report on it and how it's managed, et cetera, it is a main business activity, and therefore it gets treated in a particular way. But people seem to have taken it much more as a thing that you can sort of declare or deem. I declare this to be a main business activity. I've decided it's not a main business activity. And I think we meant something much more substantial than that. And so that's why I think it would be good to look at some of the ideas that we've got in IFRS 9. I'm not saying they're directly on point, but there's ideas in there about how you use evidence to establish a matter of fact. And the matter of fact is this a main business activity? It's not just that I've decided it's a main business activity. It's a subtle distinction, but I think it's a really important one, given how fundamental this is to the proposed structure of the model, and also the fact that people have raised concerns about cherry picking. Because if it really is a statement of fact, it shouldn't be so prone to cherry picking. And so I think we need to look quite hard at that articulation and idea.
Tom, finally.
Just quickly on what Sue and just said about that is I think Nick's suggestion about the two-step is a good way to help correct where we were less clear than we could have been. I just want to support that.
Okay, well, we have some time left, but some of us have to attend a trustees meeting at 11 o'clock sharp, so I think it's probably best to stop here and continue our conversation tomorrow. If that is agreed, then we see each other again tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you. This was really helpful.
Thank you.
See you tomorrow. Bye.